Vera Jo Regal was described as a sweet and innocent young girl with the mind of an 8-year-old. She lived an incredibly tragic life, partly brought on by her vulnerabilities, and she couldn't seem to ever escape abuse. She ended up trapped in a horrific situation with her boyfriend's criminal family, where she was essentially held hostage in appalling conditions, treated like a slave, beaten, abused, and eventually killed. Not only was her life cruelly taken from her, but the chance to be a mother to the daughter that she adored was stolen from her as well. In addition to this, the monster who stole her child, and I use that word with purpose, she was a monster. The woman who instigated the murder is yet to face any real punishment. This is the tragic tale of Vera Jo Regal. I'm Emma Kenny. Welcome to Bang to Rights, the deep dive crime podcast, which takes you through some of the most heinous crimes the world has ever seen. This is one of those cases that really does make you question if there's any justice in the world. And I want to highlight it because it's really essential that the person responsible for this ends up in prison. Ideally, until they're carried out in a box. But let's get on with today's case. So Vera, she was born on the 11th of July 1986. She was born in Findlay, Ohio. Her parents were Willard Regal and Verna Garner. And she had a sister called Ashley. And her sister Ashley said that Vera was genuinely her best friend. She said, "We shared a really special bond where we told each other everything." Vera was said to absolutely love being around people. She was really friendly. She was really sweet. She loved to dress up, wear jewelry. And one of the things that she really adored was just singing along to country music. Her uncle said that as a young person, and even as a child, she was one of those people that would just help people any way she could. She never complained. Now, as I said in the introduction, Vera Jo had some mental challenges. She was somebody who had a very young age for her actual developmental age, and she also had deficit hyperactivity disorder. So the mental age that she had was of an 8-year-old. And like it or otherwise, the world is full of predators. And the thing about having a capacity of an 8-year-old when you're older is that it makes you incredibly vulnerable. Yes, we should all be allowed to walk through life without being challenged, affected, or abused by others, but it's like these kind of predators have got a radar on their head and they know exactly the type of person to go for. And the more vulnerable you are, the more attractive you are to these kind of monsters. And today's case is absolutely going to demonstrate that. Now, Vera, like a lot of people, struggled at times with her mother. And it's not surprising because even though her mother loved her, the truth is that Vera was suffering and struggling horribly at home. So her father had been sexually and physically abusing her when she was a child. And don't get me wrong, he went to prison for this, which is fantastic. But you can understand the resentment and the abandonment that a lot of children feel when they're growing up. And they feel that even though a parent may not have known about the abuse they were experiencing and enduring, that not enough was done to protect them. Even if that's a false belief, you can understand that it will kind of pump resentment and psychologically mean that you have anger issues that you want to direct. And often you will do that to the person who has been there for you. So this isn't necessarily a representation that she was unhappy with her mother, more that she felt that her mother wouldn't abuse her for expressing those feelings. Now, unfortunately for Vera, when her mother got a new boyfriend, he also abused her. Like I said, this is the thing about predators. They just zone in on individuals that have vulnerabilities and they try to exploit them. And that's a perfect example of how that plays out. So we can definitely say from the get-go, this is a young lady who's clearly experienced a very troubled, challenging and abusive childhood. We get to 2005. And at this point, she actually achieves her Findlay High School diploma. Now, because of her developmental age compared to her actual age, she had a relatively low reading ability and also quite low math skills, as you'd expect, but she was determined and she had taken these special classes, her teachers had helped her and she'd achieved what she needed to achieve. And again, That's testament to a young girl who's trying her best and overcoming challenges and problems and issues by working really hard. And that demonstrates a particular type of characteristic and personality, and it really does pay testament to Vera and the fact that when she sets her mind on something, in spite of her problems, in spite of her limitations, she works hard to achieve. Now, Vera becomes friends with a 13-year-old Zachary Brooks when she's 19 years of age. And they start dating soon after connecting. Of course, when you think about a 19-year-old girl dating a 13-year-old boy, that sounds, feels, and would normally be really predatory, because clearly she's 19, he's 13, she's going to be the one who's got more years. It's not a legal situation, so therefore there can't be consent and so on and so forth. But I have to note that we are dealing with a girl who has a childlike mind. Therefore, the 13-year-old is actually in a better position and in a more conscious position to make decisions than she is. So they start dating, which is quite odd. But like I said, bear in mind the fact that she doesn't operate as a 19-year-old. And from the very beginning of their connection, Zachary's mother, Sherry Lynn Brooks, was really, really kind to Vera, which is what you want. When you get into a relationship with somebody, particularly when there's an age gap like that, or there may be questions about that kind of acceptability, when the mother is accepting of you, that can be really positive, a real confidence boost, because now you feel that you're extending your family, you're accepted into their family, and you're becoming part of something greater than just you. And apparently she was accepted with open arms, was the quote. For me, this is ultimately a heartbreaking reality, because Vera at this point will think her look's going to change, you know, the abuse is going to be over, she's found love. And that naivety and vulnerability will play into those ideas. She's not going to be adept at understanding other people's primary motives or manipulation. That's not where her mind will go. She would likely be thinking she's going to escape her past abuse she's had within her own family. And the problem is that that is as far from the truth as any reality could be, because actually she's just fell into the lion's den. And when I say that, if ever there was a minimal description for the reality of what I'm trying to describe, that would be it. Even though it's a lion's den, it doesn't even come close, because lions kill because they're hungry, not for pleasure. And lions don't torture their prey. So with respect, even though it's a terminology you'll associate with, I feel it underplays what I'm going to talk about today. So let's talk a little bit about the history of the Brooks family. I have struggled to actually consider any other family I've ever covered quite as bad. And I have covered some really awful cases, but to find a family that equates to this one, really difficult. The words diabolical, deviant, disgusting, disgraceful, despicable, these words feel like a light touch when I think about Sherry's family in particular. So the Brooks are locally notoriously known as a criminal family. The family has been compared to that of Charles Manson's. And I think that when people start comparing you to a cult leader and murderer, even by proxy, in Manson's case, he didn't physically murder, but he ordered others to murder and incited murder. That is not a comparison, I don't know, the average human would want. Oh, the family down the road. Yeah, I do know the family down the road. A bit like Charles Manson's, aren't they? Obviously, it's not very, shall we say, pleasant to be compared to that. But I imagine that Sherry would be really proud of those kind of comparisons. You can note, I have a lot of disdain for Sherry, and I'm not going to hide it during this particular content. They were also members of the Crips gang, so they were known to regularly commit crime. This included things like assault, burglary, drugs trafficking. I know, they sound like a pro-social bunch, don't they? Sherry Lynn Brooks was essentially the head of the Brooks family. And she had a nickname. Her nickname was Sugar Babe. Literally, if ever I were to imagine a sugar babe, Sherry would be as far away from that description as is humanly possible. Now, the reason that she had that name wasn't because she was some kind of young, attractive woman, or that she was being looked after by a millionaire male. It was because she sold up methamphetamines. So she was basically a drug dealer, but apparently she really liked the nickname, probably because it didn't depict the kind of human being that she really was. Also, just worth noting that her father was actually somebody who called her that when she was young. So some could say, oh, well, that's kind of a nostalgic name that she enjoys because it represents a relationship from many years ago. Hold that thought, because I'm going to dispute it shortly. Now, Sherry is unfortunate to look at. And I know that when it comes down to the archetypal attractive levels of society, there is an unfair reality, and that some people get to be really beautiful, some people get more physically challenged, and the truth is that every single human being has something beautiful about them. It's as simple as that. But Sherry almost ruins what I've just said by being just ugly inside and out. And I know that's a judgment. I appreciate that. You're gonna have to go with me on this, because I think that sometimes ugliness can fall into the physical attributes because there is something so dark and grotesque within that human being. And that's what I genuinely feel with this woman. I know we shouldn't be saying that somebody is ugly and somebody is attractive and comparing them, because I appreciate that no one has a choice over their looks in that respect. But like I said, there is something about this woman that I don't care if I offend, because she is ugly inside and out. She's also disabled. She used a wheelchair, but part of that is because she's very overweight. And because she's very overweight, she has a host of issues. And again, that's not a judgment on her weight. It's just a reality that when you are very overweight, you can have issues like diabetes. Diabetes can cause issues with circulation. Circulation could cause issues with your extremities and make it very, very painful. And Sherry has a lot of problems with her feet, for example, which I'll talk about a little bit later on. So I know that sounds quite judgmental. And of course, we're not saying that people who are overweight and disabled by any stretch should be judged. I'm just saying that Sherry is an individual that I really struggle with, because I think she contributes a lot to her own situation, and she is an individual who is greedy on every single level. And that's not relating to food. That is greedy as in she wants what she wants and she is going to have it, whether there is a cost to other people who do not deserve that cost or otherwise. She looks like a bully. She comes across like a bully. She sounds like a bully, and she is a bully. She's also deeply manipulative. I'm not saying that as an intelligent human being, you would not be able to see straight through her. You would. But we're talking about people with vulnerabilities. We're talking about individuals that she selects and chooses for a specific reason. And that's because she knows that she is more powerful than them, and she uses that against them. Sherry was born in 1962. Like Vera, I would say that I can have complete empathy and sympathy for the childhood that she had. It was troubled. So her father was allegedly somebody who abused her sexually. She was placed in a foster care home at 3 years of age, and that is deeply abandoning, and it can cause huge issues with attachment. And ideally, no child should go through that. They should be safe and loved, cared for and protected at home. She is returned to live with her mother, and that's when her mother actually started divorcing her father in 1978. So this is when she's 16. So she's been in care a long time. But that's the point where she returns, and it's quite a pivotal age, isn't it? 16, you're on the cusp of adulthood, but you're still a child. You're dealing with the wounds and the wars of your experience prior to that age. You're carrying the baggage without the conscience of knowing how to solve it. There are all these really challenging things that you're going through. Your body's developing, you're becoming more sexualized by society, your hormones are raging, you're dealing with wanting relationships of meaning, whilst also not necessarily having the resources to see those through, and so on and so forth. So it's a challenging age. Now, it's at this point when she gets home, she actually says to her mother, you know what, I had a baby when I was in foster care, but they just wouldn't let me keep that baby. Now, this was just a massive lie. Honestly, red flag, massive alarm bell, just going to make up a baby, just a baby. I think you're going to probably find that making up a baby is a bit of an issue, because one, you don't have it, and secondly, they live a long time, longer than you, which essentially means that there's going to be an option for people to find out in that life trajectory that this is BS. But basically, this is what she spins the yarn over. Now, it isn't the truth. It was actually another foster baby that wasn't Sherry's that was taken away, and she'd never given birth. But it feels as if this is where we start seeing that manipulation. She'll lie to get what she wants. She wants people to be manipulated into the direction that she chooses. And I would also say it highlights an obsession that's really unhealthy with babies from a really young age. So she has this fixation around babies, full stop. Also, this is really difficult to say, but it seems that Sherry actually carries on a sexual relationship with her father. And incestuous relationships seem to be a part of this particular family's MO. It's deeply disturbing. And of course, when you're a child and you're being sexually molested by a predator, a parent, for example, who's abusing you, you are an absolute victim. And it always makes me struggle when I hear about adults who are still carrying on being abused. And the lines become blurred to some degree when people look into that situation, because as an adult, or at least a young adult in this case, you are actually consenting to having an incestuous relationship with your father, then people will say, well, you are colluding with that. You are actually engaging in that. But I would say that if you have been molested throughout your childhood, and then you've been returned to a family years on after being a very young child when you're taken away, the feelings that you have for a primary caregiver can be deeply confusing. So I would still see Sherry, no matter how I feel about who she is as a deviant human being in the long run, I would still see her as a victim, even if she was consenting at that point to an incestuous relationship with her father, because she's probably looking for a connection and he's giving it to her in a sexual way, and she's accepting of that rather than be abandoned by him. But it really sticks in your throat when you think about what I've said. It's challenging, isn't it, to imagine that somebody would continue an abusive relationship with a parent, even when they're a young person growing into an adult. You'd expect that they would understand the gravity of that and withdraw. But I still see her as a victim in that moment. Sherry also has a sexual relationship with her cousin, Danny Bixler. And I appreciate that first cousins, it's not illegal to have a sexual relationship with them. Lots of cultures believe that first cousins, for example, are the perfect choice for a relationship. Personally, I think it's dangerous to some degree because of the genetic issues. And we know that because of the genetic issues in certain cultural situations. Therefore, I would say it would be far better not to have any kind of relationship with a person who's brought up as a blood relation. But like I said, that's my point of view, and that's because of the genetic reality that can be caused for the baby to be deformed or disabled or have problems that no child deserves to have anyway, but could maybe be prevented if that genetic connection wasn't there. Now, the family, they were apparently really supportive of the cousins having this relationship. In fact, they referred to them as the kissing cousins. And it's not that I would say that we could say the family were immoral at that point for that belief, because like I said, it's legal. But I think that it shows they don't necessarily consider the impact of these kind of relationships. And that's because they're not consequential thinkers. And this is something that I also believe is the problem within this family, full stop, that they're quite egocentric, quite self-motivated, quite concerned about their own needs at a cost to everybody else. And in this case, if they have babies, for example, it could be at a cost to them. Now, they actually do have a son. He's called Scotty Emmons. And this is during this relationship that they have. He's taken away because Sherry was sexually abusing him. So, like I said, at that point, any sympathy and empathy I have for her, totally gone. Everything about her is now grotesque. She's disgusting. And the fact that she's abusing a baby demonstrates the kind of reprehensible excuse for a human being that she is. And it astonishes me that when any parent sexually abuses a child, they are not carted off and sterilized. I know that sounds incredibly powerfully dominating. I appreciate that. I don't care. You sexually abuse a child, you should not be able to have children. You should not be able to be near children. You should not be able to be within 1,000 feet of a child. You lost that right, in my opinion. It's only my opinion, but I strongly believe it. So he's taken away, and Sherry's mother, Charlotte, actually raises Scotty. Now, they did keep in contact with the Brooks family, and he did spend time in the Brooks home as he grew up, despite the fact that he knew about the abuse that he'd suffered as a young child. I do think it's worth noting that if you don't have memories of the abuse and it's secondhand information, often it can be downgraded and downplayed, and therefore you feel safe reattaching to your parents. But I believe that that desensitization has probably taken place over years. So it's not just somebody who's gone, oh, I don't care that I was sexually molested and abused by my mother, the absolute freak. You're thinking, oh, it's probably been over exaggerated and the person's really nice to me now, it'll all be fine. But it really does concern me that he had any connection with his birth mother ever again. So we get to March the 5th, 1982. At this point, Sherry actually gets married to a guy called Mike Maloney. Now, she's only 19 at this point. He's 21. And it does feel like Sherry's had like five lifetimes by now. There's a huge amount of dysfunction. They move into a trailer together. This is after their marriage. And then on August the 19th, 1983, Sherry and Mike had a baby who they called Joshua. Now, you've got to understand, she has obviously been flagged to social service for being a child molester. How has she had another baby? But she's on their radar. So as soon as she has Scotty, he's taken off her. The caseworker who'd actually been assigned to them told them that one of the things that they needed to do to prove that they were making an effort with Scotty was make sure they cleaned their trailer because it was filthy and unsanitary. That's in the notes. But they just didn't bother. Also, they didn't baby-proof the trailer, so they didn't make it safe for their son. And Sherry even fed Joshua cow's milk. That's really bad. You don't feed a baby cow's milk. It's for a calf. It's as simple as that. And she's actually advised by the doctor, this is really not safe. It's going to cause a lot of issues for Joshua. And she just didn't care. He got loads of stomach issues and he struggled to eat as a result, which obviously means there's a failure to thrive. And because they were trying, although I have no idea why they were trying to keep the family together initially, she'd actually been able to access the Woman, Infants and Children's program. And that would have given her funds for things like supplies that babies require, like formula. So it's not as if she wouldn't have been able to achieve feeding him without actually having to spend the money. She could have got it for free. But no, Sherry was lazy, disengaged, and pathetic as a mother from the get-go, and she didn't attend any of the necessary appointments. So they then removed the family from the program, as they would. All of this highlights just how irresponsible Sherry is as a mother. We get to November 1983. This point, there's an incident that's actually reported to Children's Services, and a family friend had witnessed it. And because that family friend had a conscience, some morals, and was horrified by what they'd seen, they report the family to social services. And this is because Mike had actually slapped Joshua in the face, he'd sworn at the baby, and then he'd thrown him on the couch. Imagine how dangerous that is. Joshua would have only been about 3 months old at the time. Apparently, Mike had become frustrated by how much Joshua cried. I kid you not. The vitriol and rage I feel when I hear about a child being treated like this, it's just something that makes me incandescent with rage. We all know what shaken baby does. We know that the syndrome it causes is absolutely devastating. It can cause brain damage, internal bleeding. Babies at 3 months of age are helpless. Throwing the child because they're crying. Well, you know, just going to throw it out there, Mike. Probably if you want your child to stop crying, you don't throw them across the room. But you know, Mike doesn't really care about the needs of anybody but Mike. And Sherry, just let it happen. There's no retaliation. She's not scared, by the way. Sherry is not scared. In fact, the one thing that Sherry might have benefited from was a little bit of fear in her life. You know, it's good to have a little bit of fear, to think about consequences, to consider actions that could cause you, your partner, your child, harm. That would be good, but she doesn't. So in December 1983, Joshua's put into protective custody, and my God, Joshua needs it. The judge actually said that he didn't have adequate parental care, So he then gets adopted by another family and his name is changed. And that's good because that family loved him and love him. And that family enabled him to thrive. We get to 1984 and God, tell me how this happens. They have another child. So this is Sherry's third son. They name him Michael Jr. He's literally taken away really early days when he's born. Again, why? Abuse and neglect. Is this just like a conveyor belt of baby? I am infertile naturally. I've just had a baby. And let me tell you, it's taken me 10 years to achieve it. How did these individuals pop them out like this without any care, concern or issue? And people like me and millions of women like me literally find it almost impossible. And yet all we do is cherish the idea, let alone the reality of having a child. And Sherry is just having babies, disregarding their care, having them taken off her, having another one. So in 1986, I guess she gets what she really wanted. She has a baby girl, Maria. Apparently she was completely different to this little girl than she'd ever been with the boys. So she fed her, she cleaned her, she dressed her well. Often she was put in pretty dresses. But in spite of that, of course, Sherry is still completely incapable. So there were still major problems. She was really possessive of Maria, didn't want to be away from her. Didn't like anybody else near her, didn't want anybody else play with her. She wouldn't even let her out of her sight. So Sherry wasn't neglecting Maria, but at the end of the day, she was still problematic in the way she behaved around her. Now, it is possible when a parent is massively overprotective that they're dealing with something like postnatal depression. We see this where mothers have children and they literally don't want anybody else to touch the child, go near the child, hold the child, because it's this overwhelming need to protect, and that can be a symptom of PND. But that's not what we're talking about with Sherry, and you'll see this as we go through this. This is a possession-based issue. It's not about love. It's about the little girl being an object, the baby being an object, because she's completely disinterested, mostly in her children as they grow. It's just this very specific phase where they're cute and little and pretty. And that's also to do with her deviant behavior sexually, as far as I'm concerned. This woman is a pedophile. She's a child molester. End of. Now, when this little girl is taken off her, there is a really strong reasoning as to why, because Maria suffered abuse at the hands of her parents. They don't know which parent carried out the horrific abuse, but when Maria is around 1 year old, and I cannot for the life of me imagine how she was allowed to stay with this family till 1 year old, she's basically having a nappy changed. And when she's having a nappy changed, someone notices that there's blood in her nappy. Also, she's bleeding from her vagina. Now, Sherry blames this on someone else living in the house. She said it wasn't her, but it was Sherry. It was Sherry. Sherry has a predatory, sexually molesting behaviour about her. It's not just this little girl who is treated this way. So Maria's then taken to the hospital and then she's given back to Sherry. But rightly so, the doctor, who obviously knew that this was completely wrong and something terrible was happening to this girl, he gets in contact with the police, talks about the abuse with them. And at this point, Sherry actually takes her little girl to her mother's and she asks her to have Maria for the night. Now, this is really surprising, as her mother Charlotte had actually never been asked to have her overnight in the past. And when she had asked to actually have her overnight, she'd been told no. Now, in this time between going to the hospital and dropping the little girl off at the mother's, it had been decided that Maria was needing to be taken away from Sherry because she's a horrible sexual predator. And Sherry had obviously decided that that was going to happen. So she tried to get Maria out of the way so she wasn't home when they came. Now, when the police came to remove Maria, Sherry literally wouldn't tell them where she was, but they actually found her at Charlotte's house the next morning. Sherry's mother said the weirdest thing ever when this happened. Genuinely, can you imagine? If you have had all these babies taken off you, but you've managed to keep one for a year, you're hardly going to be like, good job. Great job. Well done. It's amazing. The whole 12 months. I mean, you know, most mothers will look after their child for, I don't know, 60 years until they pass over. But at the end of the day, you've done a year, and I want you to know Well done. I'm not even saying that sarcastically. That's literally what she said. She said, literally, she'd done a real good job with Maria. We're really proud of her. She kept her for a whole year. That's a direct quote. I kid you not. There are moments in this life I lose the will to live just a little bit. Yeah. She'd done a real good job with Maria. We're really proud of her. She kept her for a whole year. My God. Goldfish live longer than that. It's ridiculous to be proud of this child who has given birth to all these kids and had them taken off her, abused them, molested them, and then kept one for 1 year and actually given them a pat on the back. I think we can all see where the root of some of these issues lies. Now, bear in mind, it's not just that she's proud that she's kept her for a year. She's kind of ignoring the fact that she's a sexual predator who's abused her child. Now, to me, it just demonstrates that the family have got these incredibly low standards. And I don't know why she isn't being tried in the courts. Now, apparently, Sherry was absolutely devastated at the loss of Maria. That's literally what we're meant to believe. Devastated. Apparently, she found it traumatic that she was taken away. And then an obsession with baby girls seems to spring up. She said, she'll always be my girl, my little girl, no matter what. Yeah, no, she won't. She'll be somebody else's little girl because you're literally the worst mother I've ever come across. Then we get to 1987. Sherry has a second little girl. She calls her Sherry. I mean, of all the names in all the world, she has to call her child the same name as hers. I'm surprised she didn't put Junior after it, genuinely. Now, similar to Maria, little Sherry initially is well looked after, but Sherry didn't seem to have the same obsession that she'd had with Maria with this little girl. So, like every single one of her children before her, little Sherry actually does get taken away due to the abuse yet again, but we didn't see that instant connection, that instant gratification that she felt for having this little girl, that instant obsession with dressing her and protecting her. But what we do see is the same pattern of behaviour play out. She abuses her, and she's only 6 months old at the time, and she doesn't have any more contact with her birth mother, which is a good thing. No child should have any contact with Sherry. One of the examples of abuse where Sherry's concerned, one that was witnessed, just to give you an idea as to why I'm being incredibly judgmental and negative of this woman, is that someone that Sherry actually knew just turned up out of the blue at the house. They walk in and she sees Sherry bathing one of her little boys. That's obviously completely acceptable, but she had him up in the air and she was sucking on his penis. You're probably all realising why I am so aggressive in my manner when I'm describing this woman. Can you imagine what possesses somebody to do that? How grotesque do you have to be in a situation where you're doing that to your baby? To a baby. All I can think about is somebody like Ian Watkins from The Lost Prophets. Apparently he's in a really serious way in hospital after being attacked by other inmates. For those of you who don't know, he was a lead singer in a band. He was a horrific abuser of babies and young children. And I'm putting Sherry on the same level. I really am. When you think about the injuries to past children, when you think about her actions and what I've just described, it's grotesque. Now, by 1991, Sherry has moved on to another guy. She starts dating a guy called Kevin Lee Brooks. Now, she and Mike aren't divorced at this point, but they do later divorce, and Sherry's actually able to keep the children she had from this point forward. How? Sorry, what is going on with care services? I mean, genuinely, she has repeatedly offended and repeatedly abused kids, and now she's just able to have carte blanche with her family? And the reason I'm saying that is because when we look at chain of causation, we're always looking at missed opportunities. We're looking at whether things could have been different. And the truth is she should never have been allowed any more kids. And if that had been true and real and right, as it should have been, she would essentially not be able to commit the crime or contribute to the crime I'm covering today. So that's why it's really important when you look at the ingredients list of possibility. How is this happening? So Kevin and Sherry, the same year that they get together, they actually have a child together called Kevin Lee Brooks Jr. That's in June of that year. He's actually got a nickname, Punky. Also, June 18th, 1992, Sherry had Zachary on July the 26th, 1993, she had Garth. And then in 1997, Sherry had her final child, Chucky. I did say that. Chucky. I mean, I don't know about you. When I was considering the name of my beautiful little Etta Blue, I went through some different ideas, you know. Didn't know if it was a boy or a girl, so I was kind of like Michael Myers, Jason, obviously Eileen. All these were strong contenders, but I decided on Etta Blue in the end. But for her, Chucky, obviously going down the same path. I imagine that a terrifying, possessed plastic doll with ginger hair is the most motivating reality for most mums who are loving. Genuinely, that happened. Also, it is worth noting that Punky, so her first child, he was killed tragically on the 4th of July, 2010. He was killed by a car. And just remember that because that plays into some of the actions later on. But it is shocking. So to summarise, Sherry had 9 children in her life, of which the first 5 were taken away one by one, all within the first year of their lives. 3 of these never saw her again. Good choices, excellent choices. And Scotty and Michael did actually have further contact with Sherry despite being removed from her care due to abuse. But she was still allowed to keep the last 4 children. How, with her past behaviour, how with those dreadful living conditions, were they allowed to stay? How come she wasn't criminally prosecuted? It's disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. And let me tell you, you would only have to spend, I don't know, 8 seconds with Sherry to know that she was not fit to a purpose as a parent, and you would remove all children because she is a dangerous predator physically and sexually. So just giving you a background, really, the Brooks family and how we're going to end up where we're going to end up in the end. That backstory is really important. So let's look at Vera. Vera, as you know, is in a relationship with Sherry's 13-year-old son. She decides, and it's a massive mistake, to move into the Brooks family home. Now, she's unaware, of course, of what a nightmare that she's getting herself into because Sherry is being really nice. She's really eager for Vera to move in. And I'll tell you why. It's not because she thinks Vera is the right choice for her son. It's not because she believes that Vera is going to be an upstanding citizen and make a difference positively to their life together. It's not because she thinks Vera and her are just great mates and they're going to be able to enjoy those shopping trips together. No, it's because Sherry is desperate for her sons to have a baby girl. And there is another inciting factor, which is that Vera obviously has disability checks because she has issues developmentally. So Sherry's decided, well, she can be a bit of a cash cow. So she really manipulates Vera to move in on the pretense and promise that everything's going to be lovely and that she's so welcome. Really, it's just to bleed her dry financially and in some ways to bleed her womb dry, essentially, as well. So after Vera has moved in to the Brooks home, the treatment just declines horrendously. She's really badly treated. So she has to do loads of housework. She has to do all the cleaning. Sherry is diabetic because of her weight, and she has quite serious issues with her feet. So she would get Vera, who isn't related to her and wouldn't want to be at close quarters with this woman's feet, but she insists that Vera rub her feet after removing the bandages. And when it hurts, because Sherry wasn't looking after herself at all, as opposed to just being accountable and responsible and realizing, well, I'm the one who's put myself in this position and I'm the one who is asking Vera to actually help me and she's doing that job, the minute that Vera hurt her, she would literally get this big stick whilst Vera was sat on the floor and hit her with it. In fact, it seems like all the family abused Vera. So they take all the money from her. Those disability checks were given to Sherry. Also, she was coercively controlled, so she was financially dominated. She was not allowed to go anywhere with literally anyone. She was denied a phone, and that meant that she was isolated. She couldn't call her mother. She couldn't speak to anybody who could offer support. And one of the reasons that she didn't want Vera speaking to her mother is, of course, that would offer a support strategy. And it would mean that the manipulation that she was afflicting Vera with might not work. She wants that baby. And she doesn't want Vera going anywhere until she's achieved that. Now, in addition to the horrific treatment that I've just described, Vera really had to struggle with the living conditions as well. They were grotesque. I mean, they were absolutely grotesque. It blows my mind. These adults who have eyes and can see and actually compare their homes to other people's, surely there'd be a registration within their mind of how grotesque their living conditions are compared. I mean, I doubt very much that Sherry was living in a space where every single household in the area was as disgusting as hers. Everybody knows, you just have to turn on the TV and see a soap opera, and there'll be houses that are spotless. So you know that you are making poor choices when your house is abysmal, and her house was grotesque. So I love pets. I've got four dogs, two cats, two rescue squirrels. I like animals a lot, right? Takes a lot of work to keep things clean, but you do it because the benefit of having your animals, mental health wise, stress wise, and just enjoyment wise, beats the reality of having to constantly tidy. You'll choose to do that to have your animals. But when it comes down to Sherry literally has, for example, a pig living in the residence. But that pig is not house trained, and pigs are the fourth most sentient being in the world. I appreciate they are incredible, they are incredibly intelligent, but they've not been house trained. So it was free to defecate all over the house. This included defecating in the closet where Vera was made to sleep. Yes. So Vera is being physically abused, emotionally abused, financially abused, controlled regarding her movements, and she's made to sleep literally in pig shit. And she is very vulnerable. So she hasn't had relationships before. The ones that she's had have often been abusive. This is just more of the same. And she thinks she loves her partner. So this is the perfect storm. She's a prisoner in this place. Also, the actual home itself had no running water. Loads of people lived there. It was disgusting. It was dirty. It smelled foul. And a police officer actually said that what amazed them was they didn't even own a vacuum. So when things were spilled or just left in situ, they never got cleared up. Now, Vera was a massive people pleaser. It's one of the reasons she was so loved by people. So she always did what people asked her. She didn't stick up for herself. And because she had this caring, pleasing nature, she was the perfect victim. Sherry completely took advantage of that. She saw Vera as an easy target, and she basically was an individual that she could use to her own gain. Now, just as Sherry desired, Vera became pregnant with a baby girl. She was 22 years old, Zachary was 16. And when she finds out that she's pregnant, Sherry made it clear that the baby would be hers. And I'm not saying like a passing fun comment of the mother-in-law to be, saying, oh, I'm going to love that baby more than you're going to love that baby. You know, these kind of things happen all the time. I'm talking about her literally saying, the baby is going to be mine. She was absolutely over the moon when she realized that it was going to be a little girl. And she literally made all the decisions related to the baby. I mean, how dare you? It's not your child. Imagine the powerlessness and the helplessness that Vera felt. This grotesque bully, this imposing, angry, physically dominating liar of a woman telling you, that's not going to be your baby. And you know damn well that she means business. One of the things that Sherry does to Vera is as she's approaching her due date, Sherry decides to get fixated on the baby being born on her birthday. It's so egocentric, so diabolical, that it's quite blindsiding. But this impatience that she has for the baby's arrival, this impatience she has to make sure that that little girl is born on her birthday, I guess because that's going to synchronize them. And she's going to use that as another excuse to say, you know, this is the universe providing, and it's another indicator that I should be the mother, not you. So Sherry makes Vera drink three bottles of castor oil. Three bottles. Now, in old wives' tales, when you are wanting to labor, and particularly at the point where you are due to labour and you're not going into labour, a few spoonfuls of castor oil can be suggested to help you go into labour. So What Sherry does is think, well, three whole bottles of castor oil, that's going to force labour on Vera. Unbelievably, she actually goes into labour early. How dangerous, how selfish that she puts her at risk that way. And it's on November the 4th, 2009, that that little baby girl was born. She called her Willardine. Now, bear in mind, she was 1 month premature. She actually had to spend a few days in NICU, and she was born the day after Sherry's birthday. Now, the castor oil had made Vera really, really sick, because clearly no one in their right mind would drink three bottles of castor oil unless you are forced, or you're in a situation where developmentally you can't argue with that and you're just doing as you're told. Sherry didn't even want Vera to hold Willardine. God, it makes me so angry. You can imagine, can't you, the naivety that Vera has and the vulnerability that she has, and this little girl's been born to her and she's being restricted from even going near her. She's had a traumatic birth because Sherry's a horrific human being who doesn't care at all about the well-being of Vera. And now she's being entirely possessive over her own child. And Vera is just expected to watch and allow that possessiveness to unfold. So she isn't allowed to hold her often. And even though Vera tries constantly to spend as much time with Willardine as possible, Sherry makes it really difficult, and then she gets more and more controlling. But that demonstrates just how diabolical and dangerous Vera's situation is. She won't be registering it, but she is now almost excess to that family. You know, she's a burden. She's baggage. She served a purpose. The purpose was to give birth to a little girl, to hand that little girl over, and then really just not to be involved ever again. And that's a real problem when you're dealing with somebody with the psychology of Sherry. Because Sherry is one of those people who wants what she wants and gets what she gets, and she doesn't really care how she achieves it. Now, just to add, at this point, Vera wasn't the only person that Sherry had moved into the home and encouraged to go ahead and have a baby. So Charlotte, Michael's girlfriend, who actually lived in the Brooks house, she said everybody that lives in that house gets pregnant. And Sherry, again with her, would say, I hope it's a girl, because all she wanted were baby girls, and then she could see them as hers. She wanted every single one of her boys to have one kid by the time they were 16 or 17. I mean, everybody has aspirations, Sherry, but most of us hope they'll go to college, university in the end. Maybe, I don't know, have a normal childhood where they're not a father as a young teen. But what am I to say? What am I to know? What kind of advice am I giving to somebody so schooled as Sherry? Now, there's also Gina Lopez. So she's a 15-year-old girl who was dating Garth, another one of the children. Now, Sherry told Garth she wants another grandbaby. Gina, she became pregnant, and when she became pregnant, that coercive control again followed. So she would literally be followed around by the members of the Brooks family. She wasn't allowed to go anywhere by herself. Now, she actually has a miscarriage, and at this point, she moves back in with her mother, who actually lived quite a long way away. Now, I've had miscarriages. I'm sure many of you have. It's devastating, absolutely devastating. But I'm going to tell you, my genuine feeling is Gina had an absolutely lucky escape from Sherry. I know it's awful to lose a baby, it's horrific, but the idea of being tied to that horrible individual means that anything that could have held her there would have been problematic for Gina in the long run, especially considering Vera's fate that I'm going to talk about once she had the baby. Like I said, I'm not doing that in a disrespectful or a non-understanding point of view of how devastating miscarriage is. I'm saying that she escaped a fate that is absolutely horrific, because we know it would have been based on what happens to Vera. Now, Sherry would not let Vera move out of the house. It's not that she didn't want to. It's that Sherry controlled her and dominated her completely. And she had actually gone so far as to make threats against Willardine if Vera had tried to leave. So essentially, she's holding her there in an emotional prison, saying, you leave, Willardine's going to have some horrible accident. Willardine's going to get harmed. And of course, for Vera, she hasn't got the mental acumen to be able to challenge that. She doesn't understand that she is a victim. And on top of that, her main priority and concern is her new daughter. So she will risk her own safety to protect that of her child's. But the problem we've got now is that Sherry's got what she wanted, this little girl, Vera's excess baggage to this situation, and Zachary, Vera's boyfriend and father of the child, he started to like another girl. So at this point, he wants to get rid of Vera because he basically knows that she wouldn't like him looking at other girls. In fact, she gets angry when she's jealous. She can't contain her feelings because, remember, developmentally, she's a child. So she has tantrums and he doesn't like that. And whenever she loses it with him, whenever she gets upset and angry, she's treated really badly. She gets beaten as a result of these clashes. So she's being very badly domestically abused. And again, total sympathy for her because she's had a baby. She's been prevented from holding the baby, being around the baby, leaving with the baby. And yet the guy that she was there for, the guy that she's in that situation because of, he now doesn't want her. He wants another girl. And so obviously she's going to act out in that situation. She's traumatized. She's completely controlled. She's powerless to change her situation in her own point of view. And now she's being abandoned by the very reason she arrived in that situation. We get to September the 13th, 2010. Now, this is just 6 months before Vera's death. At this point, her sister Ashley, who was her best friend, as noted when they were growing up, she calls Findlay Police and she says, listen, my sister is being kept hostage. She's being beaten by the Brooks family, but no report of this was ever filed because the truth is the police had been called numerous times by neighbours, by Vera's relatives. People genuinely cared. They could see that she was being horribly abused and they were reporting this. But because Sherry threatened Vera and threatened Willa Dean, she refused to tell the police the truth. So she would lie to them, make out that everything was all right. And of course, that means that the police weren't able to do anything. It's really upsetting because I feel like somebody should have removed her from that situation and the child from that situation, taken her out of it for a period of time, and then when she realised that she was safe, offered her the opportunity to make statements about the treatment that she had at Sherry's and those who were abusing her to be brought to justice, but it just didn't happen. Just to highlight an occasion where this kind of abuse played out, there was an incident where Vera basically, by mistake, drops bricks on Sherry's foot. She's helping her clean out the rabbit hutch and understandably Sherry has very painful feet, but Sherry takes that reality of this really unfortunate accident that understandably hurts her to say that Vera did it on purpose. Then she went so far as to tell the rest of the family that when she did it, she didn't even apologise. So she did it on purpose, but she refuses to say sorry and then even went as far as to say she never apologises. Now, apart from the fact that this woman is a great, big, huge, grotesque liar, that's what she is. Honestly, it's constant. You can tell she's lying when her lips are moving. It's as simple as that. The idea that Vera wouldn't apologise goes against the grain of everything that she is. She's compliant, she's a pleaser, she doesn't want to get hurt. There is no way that she wouldn't have said sorry. It would be a mistake and she would immediately say sorry. Simple as. And the reason I know that Sherry's lying is because she is directly contradicted in another interview that she does where she said Vera used to constantly apologise when rubbing her feet. Why? Because she's getting hit with a massive stick. That's why. So she's very well trained and versed in how she has to approach Sherry. Apologise first, whether you are actually guilty or otherwise. So we know that Vera's personality is as a pleaser. She's naive. She's developmentally delayed. She is not somebody who goes looking for trouble. Sherry, on the other hand, is a massive liar, compulsive beyond belief. Now, the truth is that would have been an accident. She would have apologized. But then at the end of the day, remember, Sherry wants rid of Vera. The reason that she needs to get other people on side and see and say that Vera is a problem is because it gives a permission base to what she's starting to plan in her head. And what seems to start being discussed is a way to remove Vera from the family. Now, a plan starts to evolve, and this plan is absolutely terrifying because it involves the idea of throwing Vera onto train tracks. So essentially causing her great harm and then trying to cover it up by throwing her onto the train tracks, which means that it would look like a train had hit her. Now, Michael and Zachary, their plan was they were going to get her high, and then Sherry was going to give her sleeping pills, and they wanted to mix that together so that it would mean that she was inebriated and that she was unaware of what was happening, and then they could take her to the train tracks. She'd fall over onto the tracks, and then she'd get hit by a train. So literally trying to get away with murder. And you can imagine if somebody came across as intoxicated and was found on train tracks cut in half because they'd literally fallen over as a train was coming, or fallen onto the track unconscious, and there were a high level of drugs in their body, you could actually find that they would have got away with it. Because unless somebody had seen and witnessed that playing out, or seen her just before with a group of people, etc., it would be hard to pinpoint how that had happened. So this plan is so malevolent, so dark, so deviant, and yet they are genuinely talking about it. Now, before I move on to how this plays out, I need to talk about Danny Bixler. So you remember that cousin I talked about earlier on that Sherry had a relationship and a child with in the past? Well, Danny was Daniel Bixler's actual son. And 3 weeks before the murder that I'm going to talk about regarding the horrendous demise of Vera, he had actually been released from prison. Now, he was a really violent person. He was somebody who'd assaulted a teenager at a park once, and he had assaulted him to a point where he was horrifically injured. So this is somebody who really enjoys violence, incites violence, and is not afraid to harm others if so feels the need. We get to March the 20th, 2011. So Danny came to Finlay because he's on this assault charge and basically wants to avoid getting caught by the police. And obviously there's a relationship between Danny family-wise, because even though Sherry and her cousin had had a relationship, it wasn't that he was the son of that relationship, but obviously it's family, it's a cousin, so he knows Sherry. And he also knows that Sherry's house is full of people who don't necessarily directly belong to her, so she's a safe bet. He also knows that she's somebody who's criminalized. She's not going to be concerned about this assault charge, and she's probably going to give him the protection that he needs. So he ends up living with Sherry in the Brooks home, and he also brings his 17-year-old girlfriend Nicole. Now, Danny and Zachary, they become close very, very quickly. They obviously connect on a lot of levels because they're both horrible, evil human beings, and they see quite a lot of similarities within one another. Now, at this point, Vera is barely coming out of her room, barely speaking to anyone, wouldn't make eye contact, because clearly the consequences of doing anything wrong, such as sneezing in that home, is dangerous for her. Sherry takes the opportunity, because Vera essentially is staying away and keeping quiet and not wanting to antagonize anyone. It's a perfect opportunity for Sherry, because of this distance, to start lying about what Vera has done. So Vera is basically put up as this awful human being, and she starts saying to her sons, Danny and Nicole, that essentially she was responsible for Punky's death. Bear in mind what I talked about earlier on. Punky is the son who gets knocked down and killed. Nothing to do with Vera at all. She's had literally no connection with him whatsoever. But she wants to instigate violence against Vera. So one of the lies, which is about Punky being this victim of Vera's murderous hands, really seems to take hold. Sherry says that Vera pushed Punky in front of the car that killed him. She hadn't even been there. And also, this contradicts another lie that Sherry had told in the past, because she'd said that Punky's girlfriend, Heather, had pushed him in front of the car. And that had led to Heather being really badly beaten up, because Heather had been with Punky when he'd got ran over. But there was literally no evidence whatsoever that he'd been pushed. And like I said, so Heather had been the scapegoat in that moment in time. And that evidence is it had nothing to do with Vera. But remember, they're not the brightest group of people. And we have Sherry, who's quite scary and pathological in her lying. So they kind of buy into this. And it's that pack mentality. A lie is a lie until it becomes the truth, because it's told so many times. And then another lie that Sherry told about Vera was that she'd sprayed pepper spray upstairs, and that this had caused Shannon, who was Michael's girlfriend, to miscarry. Now, Scotty said that Vera did not release the pepper spray at all, and Shannon, because she heard this from Sherry and obviously was looking for an opportunity to hang the miscarriage on someone, she got really angry at Vera due to this, even though it just makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. But like I said, very clever of Sherry, who wants to get rid of Vera, to start inciting this hatred towards her. We get to March the 25th, 2011. At this point, the family increased the level of abuse, which is horrific. Particularly Zachary, Danny, Nicole. And one of the things that is deeply disturbing for me, but Nicole is in good company when you think about what I've told you about Sherry, is that the violence that escalated towards Vera turned her on, genuinely. In fact, she wanted to have sex during the violence and actually took a boyfriend up with her to the bedrooms to have sex and then return to be violent towards Vera. I mean, how deviant and disturbing is that? Vera had also at this point been stabbed in the leg by Danny. And you can imagine how terrified she is. This guy that she's had no real knowledge of, who's just suddenly turned up and is living there and is now being incredibly violent towards her and getting away with it. And Sherry, even herself in an interview, admitted that when that knife wound occurred, she went ahead and poked her finger really far into the wound. So she's really enjoying persecuting and torturing Vera. And apparently she was also putting Q-tips into the wound as well, which just makes me recoil, just the idea of that. And they never bothered treating that injury either. So she was just left there. That's really dangerous because clearly she could get infected, cause sepsis, she could die. And on that day, that abuse escalates from that knife wound to her being beaten all day long. I mean, the abuse was genuinely constant. She'd been beaten with a paddle. She'd been beaten by a belt with a metal lock on it. They nearly broke every bone in Vera's face. Also, and this is just testament to how grotesque and cruel these individuals were, she hadn't been allowed to eat in a very long time. And she was a slight girl anyway, so it wouldn't take long for her to become very, very emaciated and unwell. And when she begged for food, they forced her to eat dog feces from the garden. It's just unbelievably cruel. I mean, they treated her far worse than they treated the pig that lived in that house. And can you imagine how terrified Vera would have been? And yes, she was naive, and I'm sure that developmentally there were all these issues that I've talked about so far, but you know when your life's in danger. And I genuinely believe that she may have been naive, but she knew that she was at serious risk of this escalating to a point where she didn't make it out alive. If that isn't bad enough, they sodomized Vera with a plunger and with a toothbrush, and then they laughed at her when they made her use the toothbrush for her teeth. So she's being raped by these objects. They're all engaging in that. And bear in mind, Nicole is getting turned on by it. We get to March the 26th, 2011. This is sadly the day that will be Vera's last day on this earth. Police are actually called at this point to the Brooks home because there'd been a neighbourhood brawl. They, at this point, as a group, hide Vera because she was so dreadfully beaten up. And Nicole, Danny and Zachary, they do a runner. They want to get away from the police. Then around 4:30 p.m., they walk back home along the train tracks. And it feels like they were doing that with purpose because they were looking for a place to murder Vera. So there's a premeditation involved. There is a willingness to participate. This is not a group where pack mentality unfolds quickly and regrettable actions occur that are never excusable that happen in the heat of the moment. This is individuals going and looking and planning and premeditating the absolute vicious loss of life that they are intending to create where Vera is concerned. Gets to the evening. It's freezing cold. Zachary, Danny and Nicole instruct Vera to put her shoes on. Vera was apparently panicking, trying to resist. She kept asking why, because she knows. At this point, she tries to get Scotty to come with them because she feels that he's a protective individual. She thinks he'll help her because out of everyone, he was one of the few who never hurt her. But Zachary stops Scotty from going. And Sherry makes sure that Zachary doesn't end up going as well. They all collude. She doesn't want him to be associated with what's about to happen because Sherry had premeditated that if something went wrong and they were all caught, she was going to blame Danny and Nicole. They were expendable. They weren't her immediate family. She could sacrifice them to protect herself. You see what I'm saying about this cow? Sherry is despicable. This is her design. And bear in mind, like I said at the beginning, this woman is still free. And she also didn't want Zachary there. So like I said, she wants to hang Danny and Nicole out to dry. Vera was apparently crying. She was begging not to go. And as they're walking out of the door, that lovely young woman, that naive young girl, she turned around to Sherry and she said, "Good night, sugar babe." Vera obviously knew that something really bad was going to happen. It's as simple as that. She knew that that was probably the last time she was ever going to see Sherry. Danny and Nicole, they walked Vera to the train bridge. And bear in mind how horrifically injured Vera is. She's had a whole day of being violently beaten. Her face, every bone is broken. She's in agony. And now she's being walked towards the train bridge near a river. And then the attack begins. Nicole stabs her first. And the oldest wounds weren't as deep as the others, so they could tell that it was a girl, and the injuries were absolutely harrowing. She was cut on the neck from almost ear to ear. In fact, Danny had tried to cut off her head, but he couldn't do it. He couldn't do it because the bone that he got to prevented the head coming off. The knife wasn't sharp enough to go through it. The coroner said that the way that her head and throat had been cut was through a sawing motion. So it reminds you of ISIS, doesn't it? It reminds you of those horrible executions that people have put online of these poor individuals who've been taken hostage and beheaded that way. Before they actually kill her, they humiliate her. They force her to take her clothes off because the knife's blunt, as I've just described, so they want to be able to cause and inflict massive injuries, and going through her clothes is really difficult. They make her physically remove them so they can stab her more easily. She had 21 stab wounds in total. 15 were by Nicole, 6 were by Danny. And also, they found a lot of stab wounds in the legs because she was desperately trying to crawl away, knowing that she was dying. Then they draped that critically injured girl, critically injured body, over the train tracks and just left her to die. He threw the knife in the river. And of course, their main motive in draping her over the train tracks was they wanted the train to hit her. They wanted to destroy the truth of what had happened to her. In fact, the quote was, "They wanted the train to turn her into hamburger meat." Could they be any more disgusting? But before Vera's injuries killed her, she managed to roll herself between the tracks. She was trying to survive even those unsurvivable injuries. And even though she was naive and even though she was terrified, she knew she'd get hit by the train. And if there was any chance for her to survive, which there wasn't, she at least wouldn't be hit by the train and killed. That group of reprehensible humans even celebrated after that brutal murder. In fact, Sherry had gone so far as to invent an entire cover story ahead of Vera's murder. She told the rest of the family what to say to the police, and they were going to stick to the lie. The false story was that Vera had been out with her black boyfriend. Yeah, you're right. Racist, horrible excuse for a human. She's chosen to say black boyfriend because she knows that there are stereotypes and biases that are thrown at black men. And she thinks that that will make it seem more likely to be believed if it's the black man who she's been with. Just grotesque, and also shows how thick she is, to be fair. But it's known by everyone that the only person that she'd ever dated was Zachary. And in the past, Sherry had even blamed injuries on that false boyfriend that she's trying to make up. So she said that she had black eyes, busted nose, potential concussions, etc. But this black boyfriend was actually Zachary all along, as we know. But again, even though that's very, very basic manipulation and it fails horribly, the point is it shows that she's willing to hang anybody else out to dry. And it also shows how she feels about certain people, in this case, black people. And that feeds in to the kind of malevolent, disgusting, despicable human that she is. We get to March the 27th, 2011. At this point, Vera's body is discovered by a train conductor. They found her in a fetal position between the rail tracks. I mean, she curled up like a baby dying, naked, freezing, bleeding out, horribly mutilated alone. The 911 call that was made described a naked female body lying in the middle of the tracks, appears to be deceased. They found Vera's clothes on the riverbank, and what is absolutely distressing is in her favourite purple hoodie, there was a heartbreaking handwritten note which read, "I love you, Willa Dean. You're a good little baby girl to us. I am so glad to be your mummy, and I am glad that I had you on November the 4th at 4:16 a.m. 6 pounds, 2 ounces, 19 inches long. Mummy loves you." Oh, maybe it's just because I've had a baby that it makes me feel really emotional, but the fact that she'd written that, the fact that she adored a little girl, and she was prevented a relationship with her by that horrific human being, Sherry. Vera clearly adored her daughter, and we have to give her credit for that. In spite of the horrendous living conditions, in spite of the awful abuse, she cared so deeply for that child. And it's tragic to me that that opportunity to be a mother and a parent to Willa Dean was stolen from her. Another thing that Sherry does, which is blindsiding, and again demonstrates the kind of person that I described as ugly inside and out, is that when Vera's body is found, somebody needs to go and identify it, right? So Vera is now in the morgue. The police need Vera to be identified. So Sherry says that she's going to do it because Vera's mum had died, which was untrue. It's unbelievable. How dare she? Now, when they investigated this crime, it wasn't like Sherlock Holmes was required. I'm not going to lie. In fact, I think pretty much anyone with an average IQ like me would be able to solve this pretty simply, because lots of incriminating evidence has been left. So investigators found Nicole's bloodied T-shirt, a belt. They found a lock of Vera's hair. And also, there was CCTV footage of Danny, Nicole and Vera walking to the railway tracks. I mean, sorry, can I just have a dot-to-dot picture of how this plays out so I can just join those dots? Thank you very much. Oh, and then there's some video content as well. Gee, these individuals are bright cookies, aren't they? But you can just again see the kind of people that we're talking about. They think they can get away with this. They don't realize that these investigators have spent years and years and years, and to them, this is preschool solving of an actual situation. They can solve this crime in an instant. So they've got Danny and Nicole essentially walking Vera to a death on CCTV. So it's literally the evening of the murder that Danny and Nicole are arrested. Danny breaks straight away, actually, and tells the police he'd thrown the knife into the river and that he had been involved in the killing. Now, thankfully, the only saving grace in this horrible situation is that social services immediately remove Willa Dean from the Brooke household. So that was only 1 week after Vera was murdered. Willa Dean's around 16 months old at the time, and hopefully that means that the scars of the horrible experience of being around Sherry will heal. Now, Sherry, of course, put up a massive fight. So even though social services are not going to allow her to keep the baby, she makes out that she's the guardian. And she even made Zachary fight for custody of Willa Dean. And he's a chocolate teapot who's no use to anybody. But again, he's just going to do what she says. Now, the outcome of the investigation, you will not be surprised to know, meant that Zachary lost his parental rights to his daughter because he's got about as much parenting acumen as my goldfish does. And I don't even have a goldfish. But if I did have a goldfish and I compared the goldfish to Zachary, the goldfish would get custody of his daughter. So because he loses rights as a parent, it mercifully meant that Sherry had no right to custody. Now, the decision that they took to see whether he was going to be able to be a parent to Willa Dean is when they investigated, he failed on every level. First of all, Willa Dean would scream upon seeing Zachary, absolutely didn't want to be near him, because Willa Dean, it seems, is more like her mother and knows a wrong'un in the end when she sees one. And essentially, the fear is obvious, and that's probably because abuse had been occurring regularly. Also, they did a home inspection, which was the cherry on top of the icing on the cake, because clearly it was grotesque. Absolutely filthy, no place for a child. So can't imagine it went well. Can't imagine it went well. Hi, I'm just coming in to check Willa Dean's environment. Oh, okay, come in. Is that a pig? Yeah, it's a house pig. Is that pig house trained? No. Yeah, I didn't think it was because there's pig shit everywhere. Yeah. Is that a carpet? Yeah. Why can't I see it? We don't have a vacuum cleaner. I'm going to remove the child immediately. Immediately. Just, I don't want the clothes. I don't want anything. I'm just taking I'm taking the clothes off. They're gross. They're grotesque. They smell of pig shit. That would be how I imagine the evaluation went. Also, they did a psychiatric evaluation of Zachary. They did interviews with him and his mother. And clearly that didn't fare well either, because his mother's a pathological liar of the most grotesque level. And Zachary is an abusive, horrible human being who doesn't deserve to be within 100 feet of his child. Also, Zachary had gone on to refuse to attend parenting classes, which, I don't know, isn't going to set you in good light when you consider the expectations of social care, which is do what we say or there will be consequences. And clearly there were. And thank God. For Willa Dean, that's a lucky escape, because fortunately she was fostered less than a year after her removal from the Brooks home and she was adopted by this family. So she didn't have to go through lots of transitions, and I'm sure that she's being brought up by a literally wonderful group of people from a loving family. And she would never have experienced this with the Brooks. It would have been hell on earth. And that note that Vera wrote to Willa Dean, it was given to the adoptive family by the detective who found it. And I think that's lovely, because that little girl, when she's older, will realise that her mother loved her deeply and that she wasn't given the opportunity to be the parent that she wished to be. And I hope it's treasured. And I hope it reminds that little girl as she grows up that she was wanted, and that it was victim of circumstance that took her mother from her, not because her mother gave her up. Now, the sentencing takes place in March 2012. So Danny Bixler, obviously he and Nicole did plead guilty. He's given a 40-year life sentence for the murder. Nicole, she actually got sentenced to 23 years in prison for conspiracy to murder. But why does she get less than Danny? She is absolutely one of the reasons why Vera ended up dead. I appreciate the aggravating factors are that Danny has got a rap sheet as long as my entire body and that he's been involved in violent crime in prison before. But I still think that 23 years is incredibly lenient. And conspiracy to murder? Well, why? Why conspiracy to murder? It's first degree murder, full stop. Sherry somehow only gets charged with obstruction of justice. Obstruction of she is the mastermind behind this. I don't care whether I'm kind of bringing my own thoughts and feelings into this. She deserves to go down forever, as far as I'm concerned. She should have gone down years ago for abusing babies, let alone getting away with murder. She ends up getting 5 years probation and 30 days in prison, which is suspended because she's got bad feet. Genuinely, I don't care. Amputate them. That'll resolve it. And it'll mean that she can't get away very fast in certain circumstances. Zachary Brooks, he actually got sentenced to 4 years in prison because he got a previous theft charge, but also because he was obstructing justice because they were lying to the police about what had happened to Vera. But it's unbelievable that Zachary and Sherry get away so lightly. But unbelievably, no one was sentenced for all the abuse that Vera had endured. even though they had Nicole's statement, and bear in mind, Nicole's banged to rights, she's going down. There's very little that she can do or say that is going to affect any of the judgment that she's going to receive. She's literally going down for a long time. So I would say that it's very easy to look at Nicole's statement because she'd accepted responsibility and to say that what she says is true. And she says, Daniel Bixler, Shannon Brooks, Zachary Brooks, Garth Brooks, Sherry Brooks and I agreed to kill Vera Jo Regal on March the 26th, 2011. We agreed to do this because Shannon Brooks said that Vera Jo Regal caused her to miscarry. And bear in mind, where did that come from, guys? It came from Sherry lying about the pepper spray. Danny said that Sherry and Zachary had actually been pushing himself and Nicole to get rid of Vera, even were offered money to do so. And in his statement, he actually said, I deeply apologise for my actions. I let alcohol and drugs and the influence of other people lead me to doing these actions. And I believe both of them. Don't get me wrong, they're horrible. They deserve everything they get. Nicole deserves longer. But I fully believe that they're not just mitigating blame. They're not just trying to throw others under the bus for no reason. I genuinely believe that they absolutely are telling the truth. Sherry is the mastermind and the others all colluded. Now in Sherry's statement, she said she was very sorry for what her cousin had done. It's been stressful to me. I miss her regarding Vera. Oh my God. Can somebody just liquidise her? Just throwing it out there. Is that a possibility? Is that, it's probably not legal, is it, to liquidise somebody? And when she was doing this and talking about this, she was literally wiping away invisible tears. Yes, during a statement, literally invisible tears. Now in an interview afterwards, she even goes so far as to say it wasn't her fault. She doesn't want people talking bad about her. Oh, you've missed the boat there, love. I mean, that's been happening forever. You know, good try. I don't want anybody to talk badly about me. Well, it's been 44 years of talking badly about your sweetheart since you were abusing those children. And Sherry also makes this big deal about the fact that Zachary wasn't involved in any of it at all and that he was somehow promised that he'd only get 6 months and that he'd been screwed over by getting 4 years in jail. Honestly, this is the kind of mentality we're dealing with. Also, her own son, Scotty, so the person who Vera asked to go with her that night, he even said that Sherry had done many things in her life that should have landed her in prison. But in each instance, somehow she's only been given a slap on the wrist. This is a woman who never seems to adequately be punished for her crimes. And even her own family feel baffled by this. Scotty probably is haunted by the fact that he never went out with Vera. Yes, he stood by and certainly there was abuse that happened that he would have been aware of, but clearly he didn't have any negative intentions for Vera, but he clearly has some very strong feelings towards that heinous excuse for a parent that he has. Now, Cherry was actually later sentenced to 40 months in prison, but they were on unrelated charges. That was for drug trafficking. Isn't she the kind of person we'd all like in our lives? And she was actually released in January 2019, which is way too soon. I would ideally like her to leave prison in a box and then be set on fire by the devil. Now, many people in the local community, they were absolutely outraged at the lack of punishment that I mirror in my comments. They felt that the Brooks family had just got off incredibly lightly. They got away with murder, essentially. And they actually created a Voices for Vera group, an activist group, which wants to bring everyone involved in that girl's killing to justice. And by God and my God, I hope they do. I genuinely hope they do. I really have this like kind of hope that Sherry watches this. I think she's so narcissistic that she probably will find something about herself interesting. And I hope that every single one of you will join me in mirroring what a reprehensible human being that she is, and to just remind and reinforce the reality that one day, even if she doesn't get justice in this lifetime, the great big Beelzebub is going to be waiting for her with a carriage that's going to take her to burning hell and keep her there for eternity for what she did. Because you know what? You might be able to lie and manipulate and get away with things in this life, but I'm not a believer that that happens in the next one. So, you know, enjoy your freedom. It's going to be limited and eternity is a damn long time. In fact, it's forever.
That's it for Bang to Rights today. Join me for the next episode. See you then. Be safe.